The state of the art with regard to mind control involves the use of various forms of electromagnetic radiation and also ultrasonics to produce a number of effects. Pulsed microwaves can be directed at the individual human cerebral cortex in such a way as the person to whom they are being subjected actually hears voices in their head. It's not known exactly why this effect is produced. It's believed that the microwaves actually set up corresponding waves in the fluid that is on the inside of the brain casing. It's been known that people who are deaf can actually be made to hear through the use of pulse microwaves. Any one of us, or all of us collectively, could be made to hear a voice inside of our head by directing a microwave beam at us. I think in a society in which people are not informed that such a thing is possible, in a society, the society of the future, which I think will be, again, a technologically based fascist theocracy, a totalitarian system in which technology is used as the main trump card in order to get people to believe in a, quote, spiritual system, a religious and philosophical system, which in and of itself will be the main coercive device in getting them to accept the unacceptable and getting them to keep sitting on that tack. If you were not educated to the fact that pulse microwaves can make you hear voices, if in fact you had a relatively poor education, and the reduction of the educational system is already going on, and I think it is one of the major elements of control of the corporate states and of the national security state as well. It's one of the reasons why I do what I do. I read material on the air so that people can tape the programs and use the resulting tapes as an audio study resource, because education is important. I think in turn education will be used to deliberately blind people to the technological progress that is going on, and in turn to technologically blind them, to blind them as a result to what is actually assailing them. I think that many of these technologies will be used to produce effects which will be attributed to, quote, spiritual entities. For example, if a population, if you want to control a given population, if you can subject them to pulse microwaves so that they hear a voice, they could think that this was the voice, they could be told that this was the voice of God or of an angel or something else. I foresee the administration of this technologically based fascist theocracy as being undertaken by a class of spy priests, so to speak, to coin a phrase. Now, I realize that might seem like a mouthful under the circumstances. These will be people who will literally be intelligence agents. They will be spooks. They will be intelligence officers acting at the behest of whatever government is administering this particular manifestation of the corporate state. They also will be religious leaders. They will be spiritual leaders. They will be the ones who will be in the know about the various forms of technology that will be represented as supernatural phenomena to the masses, who are to be controlled in such a way as to get them to continue to sit on that tack and to endure that pain. One of the things that I foresee happening is an increasing development in the sophistication of mind control and the representation of sophisticated mind control, the use of microwaves to produce, for example, to voices in the head. They can produce visual hallucinations with the clarity of 35-millimeter color slides. This is going on now. People can be subjected to electromagnetic radiation. They will feel like they have been physically kicked. In other words, you could convince an ignorant person that they were being tormented by God for being wrong. You participated in a wildcat strike at the meat plant, Mr. Johnson. The Lord will punish you. You must repent for your ways. You must never strike again. The Lord does not like you to strike. And he's going to send an angel to torment you. And then they'll turn on the microwave machine and say, "Yes, Mr. Johnson, I am an angel of the Lord. You should not have struck the plant, Mr. Johnson. We don't like that up here, and we like you, Mr. Johnson. We want you to go to heaven when you die, but you won't if you strike. So we're going to show you what is going to happen to you if you strike again." And they'll get microwaves in their head. They will be told that an angel of the Lord is going to punish them. What it will be this technology. They will feel like they're being kicked, but they won't see anybody kicking them. They'll experience auditory hallucinations. They will be made to feel pain, because you can be made to feel burning sensations and other things without actually being burned, by utilizing the most sophisticated forms of mind control currently under advanced R&D and development. And poor old Mr. Johnson's not going to strike. He'll never go out on strike again because he'll be thinking he's been tormented by an angel of the Lord. And that's what Pastor Karl-Heinz Luftwaffe is going to tell him, too. I think that in addition to mind control per se, another form of technology that will be combined with this will be the use of diseases. Now, again, I'm going to gloss quickly over something that is in and of itself worthy of a lecture. And in fact, I have done a lecture in the past about AIDS called AIDS, Epidemic or Weapon of War. Genetic engineering itself offers a number of possibilities for social control. In the first place, in the application of genetic engineering to diseases, according to what I've been able to glean from the literature, AIDS is just the beginning. AIDS is to the future of biological warfare what the bow and arrow is to the atomic bomb or the ICBM. From the literature, and obviously to a certain extent one has to extrapolate and weed out information, the state of the art with regard to genetic engineering and biological warfare at this stage of the game involves some very, very sophisticated created microorganisms, either bacterium and or viruses. One of the things that is at the crest of the breaking wave of R&D into biological warfare is the creation of genetically engineered microorganisms which would be responsive to a particular environmental factor, such as a particular particular frequency of electromagnetic radiation. This is something which in the 80s, according to a number of sources, was under advanced research and development. This type of biological warfare would involve the vectoring of a population with a genetically engineered organism, again, a bacterium and or a virus, which would remain dormant within the organism until the environment in which they both existed is subjected to a particular frequency of electromagnetic radiation, at which point the organism becomes virulently active and kills the host in a very, very short period of time. Among the possibilities foreseen as within the achievable future in the 1980s were devices which could kill a human being in a matter of seconds or minutes. I think that the use of biological warfare technologies and genetically engineered microorganisms in that particular context could be combined with fascism and religion to, again, produce a particular type of effect. Say, again, you have one of these spy priests, Guru Bhagwan Sri Panzafir, and he's preaching to his loyal followers that if they engage in a particular practice, for example, social organizing or attempting to clean up the environment, that this is against the will of, you know, Krishna or whoever, Ramtha or whoever, or whatever deity or supernatural entity is portrayed as the dominant power. In fact, the dominant power will be the technology of the corporate state, and it will be applied in fashion to be determined by these spy priests. Say you have a group of people who are protesting that a chemical plant is pouring toxic waste into their drinking water supply. Well, what you do is you then take that population group and you spread these microorganisms throughout the particular population group. And then the spy priest, in this case Guru Panzafir, says, "Oh no, now you see this group of people over here in Roseville, they were protesting against the chemical plant. Now Dow Chemical has a particular place in creation according to Krishna. So when Dow Chemical wants to put its toxic waste into the water supply, this is all part of the great plan. The people in Roseville have interfered with the will of Krishna, and they are going to be punished. Krishna does not like people to interfere with his will." Then the poor bastards over in Roseville, who will have had these microorganisms, they will have been vectored, then they turn on the frequency that activates them, and within a matter of seconds or minutes, these people die in agony. According to one projection, people's cells could be made to explode in such a way as that the blood would issue from their eyes, ears, mouth, etc. They would die in agony in a matter of seconds or minutes. That could be a very, very useful tool for social control. If you have a group of people that are out of line in one way or another, if they're social activists or protesting against something they shouldn't be protesting against, you have whatever spy priest from whatever religion saying to the people that they want to control, this group of people has screwed up. They are going to be punished by God. Then when they turn on whatever device it is and these people die in agony because that frequency stimulates these microorganisms and brings them into an active and highly deadly state, well, then the group of people that have been preached to are going to be converts. They're going to say, boy, you know, I'm not going to protest when Dow Chemical pours toxic waste into my water supply. Did you see what happened to all those poor people over in Roseville? That can be the plagues of Egypt, the plagues of the Bible. In this case, however, being created by Homo sapiens, not by any sort of supernatural or godlike creature, will be an element of social control. Two things that have been projected as devices for weapons of mass destruction in the 21st century are natural disasters, meaning storms, weather, and also seismic events such as earthquakes. The United States and the Soviet Union had a treaty on weather warfare in 1969. That's a quarter of a century ago, or more at this point. What that means is that by 1969, weather warfare was either a practical reality or close enough in terms of R&D as to warrant a treaty about banning weather warfare by both sides during the Cold War. Because the goal of warfare ultimately is to occupy the enemy's territory with your own troops, usually for economic gain, nuclear weapons and also to a certain extent chemical and biological weapons are impractical in that particular regard because, as destructive as they are, when they are applied in a realistic context of warfare, it makes the occupation of the territory of the enemy that has been destroyed very difficult because in the case of nuclear weapons, you have radioactivity, which renders the environment highly toxic to one's own troops or one's own population. Same is also true with chemical and biological weapons. For that reason, military strategists have long foreseen storms and seismic events as weapons of mass destruction in the 21st century. By the same token, I think that excess populations, whether people who are simply deemed useless or people who are deemed to be downright troublesome, say a group of people that are engaged in a guerrilla warfare, say the people down in Chiapas. You want to suppress the people down in Chiapas? If they're not listening to Pastor Karlheinz Luftwaffe or Father whatever, then you create an earthquake, a devastating earthquake, and you tell the believers that the Lord is angry with the Zapatistas. You know, they are assured their lot may be a painful one, but it is necessary for people to suffer. Suffering is a blessing. Render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, and render unto God what is God's. Then you cause a hurricane to strike that region, or flooding, you have tremendous rains which flood rivers, cause rivers to flood, or a typhoon, or something that's going to create an earthquake, some sort of natural disaster. Then, and you say this is God's punishment on the non-believer, that's a very, very good way of either eliminating people who are in the way or convincing other people that they had better not emulate behavior which is proscribed. My own research has suggested to me that if it is not possible already to cause earthquakes, that seismic weaponry is under an advanced state of research and development. Indeed, I think there is circumstantial evidence that at least some of the top secret military missions of the space shuttle may, I'm not saying were, but may very well have been connected with either the development of or actual application of seismic warfare. There are some Swedish seismologists who have long advocated that where there is sufficient stress built up on a fault system, that the use of microwaves, again, in various forms of electromagnetic radiation, particularly microwaves, could be used to gradually release the stress on that fault system so as to prevent a catastrophic earthquake. That same principle could also be used to release the stress in such a way as to have a catastrophic earthquake. Again, with a class of spy priests, aware that the weather could be manipulated, that a hurricane or a typhoon could be created and applied to an area, assuming that one could, or by the same token that catastrophic flooding and or droughts and or earthquakes could be brought about. And these have all been projected for the 21st century, in which we're almost there, as weapons of mass destruction. And again, this is not my prediction, but rather the prediction of military strategists. I think that in the world to come, the manipulation of natural events, plagues, storms, droughts, flooding, earthquakes, these are things that could very easily be represented as the punishment of the divine against the iniquitous, and therefore the behavior that the iniquitous have demonstrated should not, under any circumstances, be repeated. Another technology that I think is very likely to be applied is our so-called UFOs. There is a lecture available from Archives on Audio, also a similar lecture available from She Who Remembers. And once again, I'm glossing over a lot of very important subjects very quickly because we just, due to the limitations of time, we haven't got the time to detail some of these things as effectively as I'd like. There are substantive indications that UFOs are real. Circular flying machines are real, but they don't come from outer space. They were developed right here on terra firma. The January 1995 issue of Popular Mechanics has a cover story saying UFOs are real and talking about secret testing of circular flying machines by our military over the decades. There were circular flying machines in the air over Europe during the closing days of World War II. Any good history of the 8th Army Air Force's activities in Western Europe and Germany during the closing days of World War II will have an account of the so-called Foo Fighters, or Krautballs, glowing circular flying machines that were deployed by the Germans in the air as anti-aircraft devices during the closing months of World War II. Foo, F-O-O, was a corruption of the French word for fire, F-E-U. These things at night appeared to be glowing, burning balls, and they were used for neutralizing the electronics of Allied warplanes during the closing months of the war. In fact, SHAPE, the Supreme Headquarters Allied European Front, I think. Anyway, forces, that's what the F stands for, in SHAPE, actually issued a statement in December of 1944 that these devices, these circular glowing things, were new anti-aircraft weapons being deployed by the Third Reich. There, in 1955, Secretary of the Air Force Donald Quarrel issued a statement saying that in combination with Canada, the U.S. Air Force was developing a new tactical warplane which would look like the popular conception of UFOs. He was talking about the Avro car. The okey-doke, by the way, the okey-doke with regard to the UFO question is the E.T. myth. There is absolutely no indication whatsoever that we have ever been visited by anybody from another planet. If there's life on other planets, intelligent life on other planets, there is no indication that it has ever visited the Earth. Now, I dealt with this in a previous lecture. The origins of the E.T. myth, if you find the first E.T. contact, they actually precede the first UFO sightings in the post-World War II period. It's very interesting that a lot of the people who were the first contactees either had connections with national security institutions like the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, and or fascist organizations and mystical organizations like William Dudley Pelley's Soulcraft, a mystical organization formed by William Dudley Pelley, who previously was head of the Silver Shirts, an American Nazi organization during the 30s and 40s that actually worked with Third Reich intelligence to try and overthrow the American government. The Silver Shirts overlapped heavily with a mystical fascist movement called the I Am Movement, headed up by Guy and Edna Ballard, which, by the way, looked to Mount Shasta as a sacred place where they would go for their meetings. Elements of the I Am Movement eventually evolved into the Church Universal and Triumphant of Elizabeth Clare Prophet, currently holding forth near Yosemite. Yellowstone National Park, excuse me. The use of so-called UFOs, I think, as devices of social control, representing them either as our brothers from space, superior beings in possession of technology far beyond anything ever seen on Earth, much wiser and much more powerful than we are, therefore we should turn control of our lives over to our brothers from space, might be one of the scenarios in which so-called UFOs could be utilized to get people to submit to a totalitarian political system in the belief that this system was actually a benevolent system. One of the first things that interested me in the whole question of UFOs was when Billy Graham in 1984, I saw a statement in 1984 about Billy Graham where he said, UFOs are real and they're angels sent by Jesus. Now, Billy Graham is a political animal. He is nothing if not political. And when he started saying UFOs are real and they're angels that come from Jesus, I started saying, I wonder. I think that one of the possibilities in the future is that Christian redemptionist theology, the notion of the rapture and tribulation, may very well combine with elements of New Age religion. In fact, in some of the ramblings of Shirley MacLaine, we're seeing the same thing. So that we could have a UFO-born version of the rapture and tribulation where the believers will all be taken up to some point in space, either maybe the moon or space stations or someplace where they might not particularly like what they find, but in the belief that the UFOs are in fact being sent by Jesus to rescue all the believers from Earth before the tribulation, when fires and floods and plagues and all this kind of stuff would ravage the non-believers. That's what the tribulation is in Christian redemptionist theology. I could see a version of technologically based bogus Christian redemptionism in which UFOs would be seen as messengers from Jesus, angels, what have you, to take all of the good believing Christians or all of the deserving people up into space, up to the kingdom of God, while all the non-believers get ravaged by the tribulation. There is a very strong tradition in human society to believe in salvation from above. Most of the divine monarchs who rule, not only in European culture but elsewhere, have portrayed themselves as direct descendants of a deity. The Japanese and Mayan kings, for example, like the kings of Egypt and the queens of Egypt, just like the kings and queens of Europe, portrayed themselves as descendants of divinity, usually the sun. Usually these jerks think they've evolved from the sun. I mean, that's the most... You see the sun in the sky and say, oh, yes, I am I'm evolved from the sun, who was my father, this, that, and the other thing. In a time of terrible trial, with the ozone layer gone, the rainforest disappearing, global warming flooding the low-lying coastal areas, and people being ravaged by plagues, ravaged by poverty, and bear in mind, propagandized and very poorly educated, I think it would be relatively easy to get them to believe in salvation from above. Then you bring down the UFOs, and by this time, people are going to be so beset, it won't matter what comes out of the UFO. It won't matter whether it's Jesus or a hologram or just some guy wearing a suit to make him look like a little green man from space or from Mars, or whether it's Richard Simmons wearing pantyhose and a Donald Duck mask. People are going to believe in what comes out of that UFO because they are going to be hell-bent for leather to believe in something. They want to bow down to something, and they will believe in whatever comes out of that UFO. I think that that is a very, very real possibility. I haven't got the time to go into the whole E.T. question, but an awful lot of the early E.T. contacts, for example, there was a contact by a fellow named Adamski in 1952 who met a Venusian in the desert. Now, the Venusian was tall with long blonde hair and fair skin and blue eyes. Now we know that if there's any kind of life on Venus, it's nothing like anything we know because the conditions there are not hospitable to Venus, to life forms, particularly not life forms which just happen to look like the Aryan stereotype, that tall, blonde-haired, blue-eyed, fair-skinned sons of bitches. There's an old joke that used to go around in resistance circles in Nazi Germany that the ideal German is blonde like Hitler, tall like Goebbels, and slim like Goering. That's, I think, very similar to what will be held up as the ideal. There's another very worthwhile thing to take note of in the E.T. mythology, and that is the notion that E.T.s have been visiting us for a long time, and that perhaps some of them have known the daughters of man and found them fair. Many of the E.T. cults, and there are a lot of E.T. cults around, which propose that basically the E.T. Usually involve the creation of a worldwide totalitarian system in which human beings are not wise enough to administer their own affairs. Instead, it's going to be administered by our brothers from space, who are not only wiser than we are, but also, not incidentally, much more powerful than we are. There's no indication, again, that we've ever been visited by people from outer space. I think many of the EU contacts have either been accomplished through deliberate propaganda, just flat-out lies, also mind control. An awful lot of the people who've supposedly been abducted by aliens, it turns out after they've been hypnotically regressed, the flying saucer turns out to have been a helicopter or a black van or something altogether terrestrial. Also, the notion that a higher civilization would travel light years through space in order to play tag with a couple of rednecks in Pascagoula, Mississippi, I think strains credibility under the circumstances. Rather, it's much more likely that someone wants us to believe that we're being visited by somebody from outer space. So I think UFOs themselves could be very, very powerful devices for social control. I think eventually human civilization will, such or what's left of it, will move out into space as the Earth becomes inhospitable. I think that space development, space exploration, and industrial development has some very positive possibilities. Certainly, if we could mine and obtain our natural resources in space, it would eliminate a lot of the resultant pollution here on Earth. I think eventually, as we foul our nest, we will move out into space, and I foresee an eventual transplanting of the human race into outer space, assuming that our technology permits us to survive out there as we poison the Earth. I also think that the dictates of the corporate state may very well result in the replacement of workers with other things to perform tasks. Specifically, now this is something that has actually been discussed, and in fact there was a lot of debate in the mid-1980s, and that is using genetic engineering to create new species. In fact, in 1985 there was a hot exchange between a number of scientists and the Vatican. There were proposals being floated to take some human genes and to splice them into primates so that you would create a new species. Not as intelligent as human beings, perhaps, but far more intelligent than orangutans, chimpanzees, what have you, in order to perform tasks of menial labor. Now, these creatures would not have human rights because they would not, in fact, be human. So if you have a problem where you have to get a bunch of people to schlep a bunch of minerals up out of a mountainside, and it's very costly to provide for the safety of the workers, get a bunch of genetically engineered creatures who could schlep the minerals out of the mountainside, and you wouldn't have to worry about them getting sick and dying because they wouldn't be human. Also, the development of robotics, I think, at some point in the future will be used to gradually replace the worker. I think that we may ultimately, and this might be millennia in the future, assuming we survive, I think that the imperfections of human beings, and human beings are highly imperfect, may ultimately lead to the creation of artificial intelligences. It would not surprise me if we survive long enough that at some point in the future we might create an artificial intelligence, a machine which would actually represent something of a life form, in that it would be self-conscious and intelligent enough to regard itself as separate from its actual creators. It would not surprise me if these machines eventually decided to turn on their creators. Now, we're talking about something that might take place thousands of years in the future and decide that basically the machines should supplant people altogether because people are sloppy. You know, they have cells, they get sick, they have emotions, they have feelings, and however much we try to get them to sit on the tack, it just doesn't work. However, a machine can sit on the tack because it doesn't have any feelings. You just don't put any circuitry in that part of its construction. It would not surprise me if we eventually, at some point in the future, built machines which replaced us quite consciously, saying that people are stupid. You know, they're stupid, they're weak, they have emotions, they are inefficient, and they are not really in keeping with the dictates of the corporate state. If we created a machine at some point in the future, maybe 10,000 years or 20,000 years from now, which simply put us out of existence because we are not efficient. This obviously is rumination. I can't say that would happen, but I would not dismiss that possibility. The long and the short of it is that ultimately I think we are going to find ourselves, I think we're already in that position, but if we are going to survive as a species, if civilization is going to endure, we're going to have to ask a whole lot more questions about the world we're living in than most of us are asking right now. I think people may have seen the movie The Wizard of Oz, and there's that scene where they go to see the wizard, and they're seeing a very impressive pyrotechnical display with all of the flashing lightning and the booming sound effects. And then Toto the dog pulls apart the curtain, and we see there's just a little nerd over there throwing a bunch of switches. And the wizard says, "Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain." But what I'm saying to you tonight is pay a great deal of attention to the man behind the curtain, because I suspect that those problems are going to be caused by the man behind the curtain throwing switches, and that it really will not be Krishna working for Guru Bhagwan, Sri Panzafuhr, or Jesus working for Pasha Kahan, Lifwap, or any other form of okey-doke. And I'm not saying religion per se is an okey-doke, but I think that it is already being used by certain cynical and powerful forces as an okey-doke, and I think that technology and religion will be combined in the world to come to create a totalitarian state to get people to accept the unacceptable. So the message this evening is, like that little frog that's getting swallowed by the bird, grab the throat of your oppressor and of your would-be devourer. Don't let him swallow you. And above all else, pay a great deal of attention to that man behind the curtain. Thanks so much.